will proceed to the sixth case, the United States versus Martin. Mr. Taso?
Good afternoon. George Taso for the defendant appellant Matthew Martin. One issue is presented in this appeal, whether the district court erred in denying a motion to suppress statements made by Mr. Martin with respect to a firearm that was found in the engine compartment of a car that he was driving and it was stopped on the highway in Warren County, Illinois, by agents of the Burlington, Iowa Police Department and the Warren County Deputy's Office.
So, Mr. Tassif, I have one question, which is whether these statements that he eventually makes are important because of the element of showing that he knowingly possessed the gun. I mean, this is not a prosecution for the bank robberies or any of the
Correct.
Rest of these things.
This is felon in possession of the firearm that was found by the police wrapped in a pair of men's underwear secreted inside the engine compartment of this gray Monte Carlo vehicle that Mr. Martin was driving at the time of the stop. So the element of knowledge here is critical.
And there's no other evidence at all of knowledge?
No, that he would knowingly possess the firearm that was found in that particular portion of this vehicle that belonged to another individual who was loaned the vehicle for his use. The district court denied our motion on the basis of Connecticut versus Barrett. Barrett makes sense, great sense, when one reads the case and sees that in that case, not once, not twice, but three times, Mr. Barrett, in custody for sexual misconduct charges, told the police and set the ground rules for the interrogation by saying that he was willing to speak but would not give a written statement without the presence of his lawyer.
So is the only way that can be satisfied, in your view, under Barrett, with something that's this explicit? Because you could read this record to say, you know, when he says, I'd rather talk to an attorney first before I do that, assuming that's what he said, I guess that comes out at the hearing. So Officer Morath stops everything, and then it's a few hours later he gets informed again of his rights, and nobody ever asks him again to write anything down.
That's correct. And what Morath does, though, that I find objectionable, is that Morath terminates the interview, does not clarify with Martin whether he desired to continue talking about the episode, but terminates the interview, leaves the room, and then leaves the department.
Right. No, Morath, it seems to me, dropped the ball entirely.
The Burlington, Iowa authorities, and what's important, I respectfully submit to note here, is that when Mr. Martin was stopped on State Highway 34 by these agents of two different police agencies, the record reveals that the game plan was for everybody to take Martin to the Warren County Sheriff's Department so that everybody could interview him and process him for what would be state court drug and gun charges. So Morath, who was the arresting officer in this case, who took Martin into custody at the scene of this traffic stop, had to have known that the Iowa authorities who participated in this wanted to talk to Martin about their concerns, which was this bank robbery in Burlington some 3 weeks earlier. So it's inexcusable for Morath to terminate the interview with the last words said by Martin, I'd rather talk to a lawyer before I do that, not to communicate that to his fellow officers to put them on notice that he was requesting counsel. And further, unlike in Barrett and every other case relied upon by the government, Martin did nothing. Martin said nothing in the first interview to suggest to the officer that he was willing to speak further about the reason for his arrest. I mean, in Barrett, you've got three invocations where he's saying, I'll talk to you, I'll talk to you, I'll talk to you. And the Supreme Court said that suppression of the statement would make no sense because the police are merely availing themselves of the opportunity that the suspect himself is providing. That's not the case in this instance.
What would the police have done, the Iowa police have done, if they would have known that he asked to speak to an attorney?
Well, under Edwards, under the ironclad rule of Edwards versus Arizona, once a suspect invokes his right to counsel under Miranda, the police may not reinitiate conversation unless they provide him with counsel or he initiates the conversation with them. At the very least, we respectfully submit that Morth should have notified his fellow officers and should have honored that request to get a lawyer there at the sheriff's department.
Has he unambiguously requested counsel, or has he requested counsel in the setting of the written statement?
I respectfully submit that he is requesting counsel, because unlike in Barrett, he's not conditioning this saying, I'm still willing to talk. Indeed, what happened here was that when the Morth phrased the question, would you be interested in giving us a written statement about this? Martin's response is, I'd rather talk to a lawyer first before doing that. So Martin is making it very clear he wants counsel present.
For a written statement?
Yes, but for a written statement being the question, the preceding question that was posed. And I respectfully submit, in this instance, a police officer under these circumstances can't just sit there and say, well, wait a minute, are you still willing to talk? Because there was an earlier oral discussion where Martin denied involvement with the gun and the drugs found in the car. So our position is that under Edwards versus Arizona, once the request for counsel was made, and the district court said there was an unequivocal request here, but it was for a written statement relying on Barrett. And Barrett, with its rationale and its holding within the context of that specific set of facts, simply cannot stand muster here as a waiver of his Fifth Amendment right to counsel under Miranda on these facts.
This is not what I would call an egregious error. They did Mirandize him, and he agreed to talk.
But under Edwards, they're not allowed to even reinitiate conversations.
Did they charge him in Iowa?
They did not. So, further, under the doctrine of imputed knowledge, clearly the knowledge that he had invoked his right to counsel is imputed to all, whether the first officer communicated that to the others or not. So for these reasons, we respectfully submit that under Edwards versus Arizona, this court should reverse the district court's order and remand for further proceedings.
Thank you, Stephen. Ms. Mullen.
May it please the court, counsel, Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. This case comes down to how would an ordinary person understand Mr. Martin's words? That's what we are told in Connecticut v. Barrett. We are to look at the words of the defendant and ask ourselves, how would an ordinary person interpret them? So let's look at those words.
But
in
could I just interject and say, if the exact words of the defendant are so important, it's actually quite unfortunate that we have no record of what the defendant actually said. There's no videotape, there's no transcription. There's testimony at a suppression hearing, but even there, Officer Morth doesn't phrase it the same way every time, and the district court doesn't seem to have made a factual finding on that. So if this is really the be-all and the end-all, that's a real impediment.
There is testimony about it, and you're right, Judge Wood, there isn't a specific factual finding. There is a finding that there was an unambiguous, unequivocal, limited request for counsel here from the court. But what we do have...
Everybody seems to think, he says, I would, quote, rather talk to an attorney first before I do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if actions speak at least as loud as words, it seems to me Officer Morath seems to have understood that as a blanket invocation of a desire for an attorney, because he shuts everything off at that point. He doesn't say, oh, well, we can keep chatting then. He doesn't in any way behave as though he thinks it's simply limited to writing something
down. Well, I'm really glad you raised that, Judge Wood, because I think it's important for us to understand the facts of this case and the role that that deputy was playing in this case. He did not even arrive at the traffic stop until
well into the stop. Well, we know that, but he was in the room talking to Mr. Martin.
And he did.
And he does stop talking altogether after this statement, which is great. I mean, that's what Edwards says you're supposed to do. So far, so good. He just drops the ball.
Right. And no one's going to, you know, we're not going to stand here and suggest that this was ideal police work. But I do want to make sure that the court understands. He did testify that he had a very limited purpose in interviewing the defendant.
But why would he have stopped then? Why would he have stopped as soon as the man says, I'd rather talk to an attorney?
Very simple answer to that question, Your Honor. He stopped because he was finished. That was the written statement was the period at the end of the sentence. He testified, I had already asked him everything that I intended to ask him. I was trying to establish who owned this vehicle and was he aware of the marijuana, the cocaine, and the gun in the vehicle. He had covered all that territory with the defendant. There was nothing else for him to ask him.
So we're to believe that he just accidentally did the right thing, that he intended to violate Mr. Martin's rights, but he was done, so he just didn't?
Well, I think I'm not sure that I would put it that way. I don't think he accidentally did anything. I think he intentionally ended the interview not because the defendant said, I want an attorney before I put it in writing, but because, again, that was his last order of business when the defendant said, I'm not interested in committing this to writing.
Well, he doesn't say that. He says, whatever these words are, before I do that.
And you interpret that
to relate back to the previous sentence, which apparently was, would you be willing to write that down, or would you be willing to provide a written statement.
And so in our view, the ordinary meaning of I'd rather talk to an attorney first before I do that means I'd rather talk to an attorney before I commit something to writing.
But notice how clean the Connecticut against Barrett rule is if you actually follow the case, where there's an affirmative indication that the defendant himself is drawing the line between written and oral.
Yes, but we have to also look at the facts of Connecticut v. Barrett to understand why that was happening. And in that particular case, the police officers went to Barrett and said, we would like, Mirandized him and said, would you be willing to talk to us and prepare a written statement? He said, I will talk to you. I will not prepare a written statement. They then left the room. They returned 30 minutes later, re-Mirandized him and said, have you changed your mind? Would you be willing now to give a written statement? Which prompted Barrett to say, no, I am willing to talk to you. I am not willing to give a written statement. They took the oral statement. The tape recorder malfunctioned. The same officers came back to him a third time, re-Mirandized him, said we had a tape recorder failure. Would you now consider giving a written statement? And he said, no, I will give an oral statement. I'm not going to give a written statement. So we have that cleanness in those facts because of the way that everything unfolded here.
How do we know that that wasn't important to the Supreme Court?
Well, I think it was important to the Supreme Court in the sense that the Supreme Court is telling us we need to look to see whether or not the statement was ambiguous. And in that context, they said it's clear that that the invocation for the limited right was very clear here because he contemporaneously said, I will do this, but I will not do that. Now, in this case, it isn't as contemporaneous, but again, we don't have officers saying to the defendant, would you reconsider? Will you put this in writing? We have officers who haven't talked to the first officer, don't even know that the defendant suggested that he wanted an attorney prior to putting something in writing. But that was the single request that Mr. Martin made, and that request was honored by the police officers. No one else. I would submit that it's more egregious in the Barrett case because they keep going back to him and asking him to reconsider his decision to put it in writing.
But in your view, it's perfectly okay because he's left the door open to the oral exchange, so the police don't have to stop a conversation if the defendant hasn't asked them.
Well, I don't think it's okay, actually, Judge Wood, for police officers, once a defendant has said, I want an attorney before I put something in writing, to continue to go back to that defendant and say, would you reconsider your position on that? However, it's clear from Barrett that, again, we want to keep the defendant in the driver's seat here. That was really The reason for the Edwards decision was to say, once a defendant has been Mirandized and has decided that he will talk, we want to keep him in the driver's seat. So if at some point he says, I'm finished, I'm no longer interested in talking, the police officers need to honor that.
But isn't this really a case where the system just fell apart? If those Burlington, Iowa detectives had been sitting right outside the room when Officer Morath walks out, he would have said to them, you know, he said he'd rather talk to an attorney first before he signed something, and maybe they would go in and say, well, are you willing to talk to him? I mean, you know, we would actually have what we don't have, which is any assurance that this defendant is in the driver's seat. Instead, we have this fresh, the world just started now, you know, new set of Miranda warnings, and we don't even know if the Iowa detectives simply refrained from getting something in writing, or they didn't think they needed it, or, you know, we have no idea.
Well, let's keep in mind, too, the Supreme Court case of Davis, because if there is an ambiguity here, the officers are not required to resolve that ambiguity. And Davis says, look, would we prefer that officers in these situations where it might be ambiguous whether or not a defendant is currently asking for an attorney, would we prefer that the officers clarify that? Of course, we would always prefer that we have a cleaner record, but it isn't necessary. So even had the deputy spoken to the Burlington police, Burlington detectives, and said, listen, he denies possessing anything in the car. He denies knowledge of anything in the car. That's all I talked to him about. I asked him if he'd put it in writing. He said no. There's nothing preventing them from going in at that point and continuing to question him. There was nothing, obviously, as the court has pointed out, from preventing the deputy from continuing to question him once he said, I won't commit this to writing without an attorney. There have been many cases post-Barrett that have cases involving, for example, polygraph examinations or consent to search, where a defendant waives his right to an attorney and the police officers start questioning the defendant. At some point in time, they want to move to the next step. Would you be willing to now take a polygraph? Well, I'm not going to take a polygraph until I have an attorney present. Those officers then went on to ask more questions. There was nothing, you know, this court found that there was nothing wrong with that under Barrett. This is a Barrett case. This is not an Edwards case. This is not a situation where a defendant said, I am finished. I am no longer interested in talking to you. This interview is over. And then officers came back and attempted to reinitiate contact. This is a Barrett case where the defendant said, at the beginning, I'm willing to speak to you, was speaking to the officer, never once asked for an attorney until the officer said, will you commit this to writing? The defendant very clearly said, I would like to speak to an attorney before I do that. And then again was Mirandized before those Burlington detectives started talking to him, willingly agreed to answer questions, and the issue about committing a statement to writing was never brought up. So the condition that he placed on the interview was honored by the detectives. We would ask that this court affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bowman. Mr. Tassa?
Practice is a Barrett case, and that being the case, we look to the language of Barrett, which states, as quoted in the brief, Barrett's limited requests for counsel were accompanied by affirmative announcements of his willingness to speak with the authorities. The fact that officials took the opportunity provided by Barrett to obtain an oral confession is quite consistent with the Fifth Amendment. In this case, Burlington police should have provided Martin with counsel before they attempted to initiate conversations with him following the exchange between Morath and Martin. This is no record upon which, I respectfully submit, this is no record upon which this court can sustain and affirm a waiver of the Fifth Amendment right to counsel under Miranda on these facts. So I respectfully ask that the court reverse.
Thank you, Ms. Sassa. Thank you, Ms. Mullen. Case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.